Hello and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from the Lancet Child and Adolescent Health. It's March 2022 and I'm Sophia Davis. We're going to be talking today about gender equity and young people's health. And since gender equity is such a huge topic, we wanted to focus in on sexual and reproductive health and rights in particular. I'm joined today by Hamayel Sana and Egle Yanashonite, who are both members of our journal's Youth Advisory Board, which we set up last year. Hamayel is a fifth-year medical student at Bolan Medical College from Balochistan, Pakistan, and is the vice lead in the Gender Equity in Global Surgery initiative. And she's also active in several youth organisations across the globe as a healthcare policy and research advocate. And Egle is a resident doctor training in dermatovenereology in Lithuania and is also the vice chair of the healthcare professionals constituency at the WHO-hosted Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health. And she's a Women Deliver Young Leader. So very impressive qualifications of our two members of our Youth Advisory Board who are talking to me today, and I'm delighted to have you both here. And so we chose all together, the three of us, we chose to focus in on this topic of sexual and reproductive health and rights. So the way we're going to work this podcast today is that I'm going to be interviewing Egle and Hamayel. They're my experts today. So I want to ask you both, what do you, first of all, just to get things clear, what do you mean by sexual and reproductive health and rights? What do you understand by that?
So in fact, the most commonly used and I would say up-to-date definition is actually from the 2018, the Guttmacher Lancet Commission on Sexual and Reproductive Health and Rights. And I will say SRHR from now on. In its broadest definition, it actually describes sexual and reproductive health as a state of physical, emotional, mental, and social well-being in relation to all aspects of sexuality and reproduction, and not merely the absence of disease, dysfunction, or infirmity, which I think reminds all of us of the common WHO health definition. According to this publication, everyone has a right to make decisions governing their bodies, and to also access services that support these rights. It is important that achievement of sexual and reproductive health relies on the realization of sexual and reproductive rights, which are also based on human rights. SRHR is important as a whole, but I do think that it is essential to emphasize that every individual component of it is equally important. So we have reproductive health. An example of reproductive health in action could be access to safe and affordable methods of contraception of one's choice. For the reproductive rights, an example could be a right to a mutually respectful gender relation. For sexual rights, an example could be a woman entering into a marriage with free and full consent and with equality between the spouses. And for sexual health, an example could be access to prevention and management of cancers of the reproductive system. I would also like to note that, unfortunately, SRHR is not a globally accepted concept due to some institutions that do not endorse the sexual rights concept. However, it is virtually universally endorsed by all the largest youth-led organizations.
Thank you so much, Egle. What an excellent definition. So, Hamayel, maybe turning to you now, why do you think sexual and reproductive health and rights are so important for young people and for their health and well-being? And I suppose what I mean by that is, what have you observed in your country, in your context, with how the situation is at the moment with SRHR?
I think that one of the most important phases of an adolescent's life is when they go through puberty, because not only do they go through physical changes and chemical changes, but they also mature sexually. And the way that they interact with the world also changes. And this is where the access to sexual and reproductive health and rights comes, because it helps them in comprehending how exactly the rapidly changing landscape is going to influence them and how they would influence that. And it helps them in understanding the role they would play and also how exactly can they thrive in the society. And if we put it in the context of communities, countries where sexual and reproductive health and rights is not often talked about, and when it is talked about, it has a certain stigma associated with it, these young people find themselves in a very special situation where they start internalizing the progress, or I would say the changes happening within them and outside of them. And this is a resounding effect because sexual and reproductive health rights and education and the lack thereof creates a specific situation in which young people often find themselves resorting to exploring content that is not appropriate for their age and also not accurate. And it ends up creating an erroneous image of a person's sexuality. And also all this misinformation tends to get internalized by the young person, which manifests later on as unhealthy behaviors. And this leads us all to thinking that comprehensive sexuality education is one of the most important elements of any young person's life. And that is why WHO puts it among the top of the list for the needs of SR, sexual and reproductive health rights of adolescents. And this is why we should be talking more about it and thinking how we can improve the situation.
Right. So I also was wondering, like, specifically about what you've observed in Pakistan with how the situation is at the moment. Like, could you tell us a bit about that in terms of why this topic has become interesting to you at all? Like, what has made you notice or care about this topic, Hamael?
So in Pakistan, the sexual and reproductive health and rights, the topic is still associated with a very specific amount of stigma. And also this notion that young people are not supposed to discuss it among their peers or with their elders. And this is a very important situation in a young person's life, because when you are not able to share what you're going through and what you're perceiving with your surroundings, it creates a information divide between what you're seeing and what you're going through. So from that perspective, young people feel themselves ostracized when it comes to sexual and reproductive health and rights and access to them. And it also leads them to a situation where they basically manifest this by doing the same thing to the coming generation. So it's like a generational thing that's going on and on. And as a young person, I was exposed to sexual and reproductive health and rights when I was able to join the medical school. And before that, I was basically clueless about this aspect of healthcare that was so essential to my age group. So this is the situation here. And I believe that we need to integrate sexual and reproductive health rights in the healthcare system of our country. And we are still in the beginning of it, and there's still a long way to go, especially when it comes to young people and how exactly do their needs come into the whole picture.
Right. And Egle, what about you coming from your context in Lithuania?
So I have to say, when you asked the question about observing this lack of openness, what I want to say is not what it's perhaps not what I have observed, but what I have not observed, because when I was growing up, I would say there was a complete absence of the topics of SRHR. And in fact, the first time in my life that I heard about SRHR, and what I mean is not just the definition of the term, even though it includes it, but its components and its implications to my life as a young woman, was actually in my first year of medical school. And I want to highlight that this was not a result of any formal education, but a workshop set up by fellow medical students, raising awareness about how SRHR impacts healthcare. In Lithuania, the topics related to SRHR are heavily stigmatized and deemed to be something to be ashamed about quite often. I do see that there is progress and there are more and more people starting these conversations, but in general, it's still a gap that we have in our education.
So it seems clear that both of you, in fact, only really encountered this topic upon going to medical school. And as Egle was saying, not even in a particularly formal manner. And it's clear that both of you think that this is a really important topic for young people. But how do you see it as being connected to gender equity in particular? So in what way, connected to SRHR, is there currently gender inequality? Or we could say, how does gender inequality manifest itself through sexual and reproductive health and rights?
So in my opinion, gender equity cannot be achieved without the sexual and reproductive health and rights. I believe that everybody has a right to make a decision that relates to their bodies, and this decision should be made free of stigma and coercion. And I believe that when we talk about gender equity, in many of the cases, we talk about the concept of power, and we also talk about the equal distribution of power in our societies. And the personal issue that comes to my mind is that how can I, a young woman, be in a position of power in general if I am not empowered to make decisions about my own body? And a key clue to what SRHR provides is bodily autonomy. And a practical example could be an unintended pregnancy because of lack of access to information about modern contraception options. It must be said that a woman or a girl who accesses healthcare is a woman who can make a decision about her life, who can make a decision about her career and her personal goals. And I think that it was UNFPA executive director who said that when a woman can plan a family, she can plan her life. And also, I would like to note that from the United Nations side, SRHR is actually included into the gender equity goal in the Sustainable Development Goals agenda. And there it relates to ensuring universal access to sexual and reproductive health and reproductive rights.
That's such a good point about bodily autonomy. And it's interesting to think that for some people or some genders, education on sexual and reproductive health and rights is not so necessary to achieving bodily autonomy and power, but for others it is. And I think that's maybe what you're getting at. Hamael, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, actually. I would like to add that gender is a spectrum, and there are some real disparities, just like Egle said earlier, when it comes to access to healthcare among different genders. But when we put this inequity and healthcare access in the context of sexual and reproductive health and rights, the gap gets really wide. And we see a multitude of cultural, political, and financial barriers that are in the middle of it. We also often find ourselves seeing that going to a physician or a healthcare provider is always comes with a certain amount of stigma when you're a young person, especially in a low middle income country or in a precarious position. For example, like you are in a refugee camp or you are transitioning between different situations. So this is a very important stigma that comes with accessing sexual and reproductive health rights, and the implicit bias that you get exposed to when you approach a healthcare professional for sexual and reproductive health and rights counseling or care. So just like you said that sexual reproductive health and rights is the way that gender equity manifests, so we need to understand that to achieve gender equity, sexual and reproductive health rights have to be put at the very center of it, because most of the systems around the world are just in the process of undertaking and strategizing to meet the needs of sexual and reproductive health and rights of young people. And we need to understand that it is universal. It is the need of all genders. And we have to put equity at the very center when we want to talk about the rights to achieve sexual and reproductive health and access.
Such a good point. And for our listeners, you might be noticing that although Egle and Hamayal are classified as young people, they are exceptionally eloquent and well informed. This isn't the first time that both of you have been thinking about this topic more seriously, is it? So you've both been involved with the International Federation of Medical Students Association, among various other organizations. But can you tell us a little bit about what you did in that organization in particular, connected to sexual and reproductive health rights?
Thank you so much for bringing that up. So yes, actually, both Aglia and I have experience of working in IFMSU for some 5 years or something. So basically what we do in these youth organizations or IFMSUs specifically is to empower advocates and establish the position of medical students as health leaders and decision makers. So we work on different areas. We work internationally, nationally, and then also locally. So how it all began is that for most of us who work in IFMSA or any other youth organization, I guess it always begins with your ground level advocacy. And it depends on what area gets you the most passionate about and which area you see yourself advocating for and seeing yourself making a change in. So it always begins with ground level advocates like me working on areas that they're passionate about. And then together they develop trainings and different activities that can be delivered to people like who are just in the phase of to learn how exactly can they make an impact. So these trainings are developed for them. And then eventually these trainings get translated into national levels and then international levels. And this is where the force of young people come together. So basically, we would produce a document, an advocacy tool per se, that we would like to call a policy document. And this is the document essentially that has been formed by the opinions and the experiences of young people throughout the world. And this policy document would then be used to advocate for the certain subject matter to stakeholders. Like, for example, it could be the World Health Organization or some other United Nations organizational bodies. So this way, the outcomes then get translated for our members and go back to our local communities with different opinions and exposure that it gets through high-level engagement that we do in IFMSA. So we have had some very fortunate experiences, just like you mentioned, when it came to sexual and reproductive health rights. So we got to work on topics like comprehensive sexuality education, safe abortions, and even for sexual and reproductive health rights itself. So basically, just like you mentioned earlier, that our first exposure to sexual reproductive health rights was when we got inducted in our medical school. So our goal basically throughout it all was that for the generations to come, this situation might change and every person who is there at the table talking about the rights for young people would have ample knowledge of how the situation is for young people around the world and how exactly can we make an impact when we come from a place of power and information.
Very impressive. So as far as I understand it, you as medical students advocate for changes from, like you said, from this ground level right up through different levels, up to the high policy levels in the IFMSA. And then this feeds right back down again to training on that ground level for students, medical students all around the world. So can you tell us some specific changes that you advocated for as part of that work as young medics in training in terms of sexual and reproductive health and rights? Egle?
So we have a range of call of actions that we address through our policy documents. It's important to say that although we do have these calls of action, we sometimes cannot accelerate urgent change in healthcare professionals' curricula, even though we work on it. But our education cannot wait. We as young people are already changing the system from the inside to best of our ability. So we mobilize to peer educate each other and to provide these services to adolescents in our local context. But of course, it cannot go forever that medical students will be the ones responsible for the comprehensive sexuality education on national level, because this is not sustainable. So although we try to provide a good example through this, and we do try to provide education to each other, our ultimate goal would be that healthcare professionals are taught in the medical schools on what are sexual and reproductive health and rights and how to address them, and also that comprehensive sexuality education curricula is implemented in schools in an age-appropriate manner. Because although we are doing what we can on the ground, it is not enough and more systematic change is needed.
So it sounds as though you've already been pioneering change as young people, and I think that's wonderful, this emphasis on education as being really crucial for SRHR. You've mentioned medical students and schools in particular. Who in particular do you think needs educating on SRHR, and what do you think that would bring if we loop this back to gender equity?
So I think that's a very interesting question, and I would like to say that sexual and reproductive health and rights is a universal knowledge that is needed by everyone, regardless of their gender, country, ethnicity, or even the culture they're coming from. We have seen through so many research studies that lack of education affects women and girls differently than boys, not to mention the other minority groups, for example, the trans community. So once we have established that, we also have to look at the barriers that women face in getting access to sexual and reproductive health rights. However, we have also seen that when women get ample education regarding their sexuality, their choices regarding their reproductive health, their bodily autonomy, it opens doorways for them. It helps them to approach their lives in the manner that they decide, be it personally or professionally, without feeling ostracized or stigmatized for getting access to sexual and reproductive health rights. So, in my opinion, improving SRHR and bodily autonomy is one of the most crucial elements that we can provide to a young person to improve their lives throughout, not just for short term, but for the long term. And it even has shown that getting good exposure to and good education regarding sexual and reproductive health rights improves the mental health of young adults. And it gives them the right to approach their lives and make career choices without feeling bound with their sexual decisions. So it is paramount for the progress of a society to augment gender equity. And SRHR is one of the best ways to ensure it and to make prosperity for young people a reality when it's not so at the moment.
And Egle, what about you? Do you have anything to add to that?
Yes. So Hamayel already spoke about the many benefits, including mental health. And yes, there has been multiple publications on the studies that comprehensive sexuality education has health benefits, such as reduced sexually transmitted infections, HIV rates, decreased rates of unintended pregnancies. And in contrary to a popular belief, it actually does not increase sexual activity or the number of sexual partners, and actually leads to delayed first sexual activity. But I would like to expand a bit more, because besides these positive outcomes, there are also other benefits. For example, it helps to reduce the stigma of these topics in our society. And then people and adolescents are more keen to contact and reach out for help if needed. Because talking about this, having comprehensive sexuality education helps to make SRHR a normal part of conversation in our daily lives, and not something that we have to hide or that we feel that we should be ashamed of discussing, be it with someone that is close to us, a friend, or a healthcare professional. And in the end, here is the powerful connection to the gender equity, because it gives you the real bodily autonomy to discuss and then to make a decision about your health on your own.
Such good points from both of you there. And we've talked about education, like comprehensive sexuality education. If you would narrow down either within that, or if you'd narrow down in the topic of SRHR in general, are there particular topics within it that you think should be given more attention today that aren't talked about enough? And again, how would you relate those back to challenging the gender inequity that persists today?
So personally, I would like to talk a bit more about consent and how we teach children consent, because it is an essential topic within SRHR, although it may not be that obvious. And of course, there has been a huge shift in past years in the public awareness about consent and sexual activity, and I do think that it has been talked about. Consent is another way to reclaim and to affirm this power to make a decision, and also for another person to understand, to accept, and most importantly, respect this decision. You know, people are often quite hesitant about comprehensive sexuality education starting from a young age. However, it's important to understand that different topics are addressed for different age groups in an appropriate manner. And one of the first things that should be taught is actually consent, and it should be taught from a very young age, because consent is not only about sexual relationships, it is also about relationships in general, about bodily autonomy, because, for me in a local context in Lithuania, young children are very often forced into, let's say, hugs or kisses by relatives or other people that they might be seeing for first time in their lives, in scenarios they might not wish for. And the children should be able to explicitly say no and have this decision respected. I believe that this is a healthy foundation for the understanding of the concept to follow for the rest of their lives. The consent has to be not only voluntarily, it has to be enthusiastic. And how does this circle back to gender equity? I think it's important to note that a problem that we have in our society, especially in Lithuania, is toxic masculinity. And in my culture, well, now things are changing somewhat, but it used to be definitely expected that girls would be more submissive. And I do think that to be taught from a young age that you are the person who draws the line and that another person has to respect your decision is important. And in this way, it connects to gender equity in the future of the girls.
I very much agree. And I have to say, as an aunt of 7 nephews and nieces I have now who are all quite little, I very much try my best not to force hugs and kisses upon them, even as I might want to. No, but I very much agree that it's important to start from a very young age of learning this, learning the ability to determine one's own bodily fate. And I agree with what you say there. Hamael, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, actually. So, as we mentioned earlier, that gender is a spectrum. I would like to take this opportunity to say that when we talk about equity, we want to make sure that every person has equal rights to access to something as important as SRHR. And it is already established fact that it is a human right. Unfortunately, in my opinion, and from what I have seen, there's very little data regarding the gap in the type of curricula or education that is being provided on sexual and reproductive health and rights across different countries. And this is important for us to understand how exactly is this divide getting translated across generations. This is the data that is essential for us to understand also the needs of these people who have not had the right amount of education or exposure to sexual and reproductive health and rights. So in my opinion, especially from coming from a country like Pakistan, where I haven't seen much discussions being done on this topic, I think it is the next step for us to achieve gender equity is to target sexual and reproductive health and rights research so that we can influence policies and healthcare systems so that it is tailored to the needs of vulnerable communities like women and girls, trans community, LGBTQIAs, and also adolescents in refugee camps or asylum seekers. So this is a part of gender equity and SRHR that I think needs the most attention in the lens of providing care to all.
So really focusing in on particular groups and what they need. I think we've covered a lot of interesting points about how important sexual and reproductive health and rights are to young people and just how much of an impact they can make on gender equity. Do you have any other points that we've missed so far?
So I would say that as the countries are augmenting gender equity across different circles, from their parliaments to their healthcare workforce, and even access to opportunities in different sectors, it is important that they put sexual and reproductive health and rights as a driving force towards gender competency. Because sexual and reproductive health and rights are human rights that everyone should have access to. And we as young people, we find ourselves still in a situation where not all of us are getting the right amount or even the quality of education to build our decisions on, and also the mentorship or the healthcare services that we need to decide our personal and professional lives the way that we deserve. And I think it is important that all countries create, even on a local level, communities where every person gets ample education regarding their sexual and reproductive health and rights, and also have enough autonomy to make decisions on where they want to lead with their sexual and reproductive lives and the way they want to approach it without feeling any social stigma or ostracization. So that would be my message.
So it sounds like from, if I think of the themes of what we've talked about, that education is so important and autonomy, bodily autonomy is so key. It sounds as though those are the big topics, as well as challenging stigma and making it okay to have these conversations. Egle, do you have anything else that you'd like to add before we finish looking at these topics?
Yes. So I think that for all healthcare professionals, it is quite important to remember that you can be a part of advancing gender equity through your care, through the care that you provide, through sexual and reproductive health and rights. I think that it's important to remember that even though we are making these baby steps into perhaps bringing this change and making SRHR a social norm, there is still a generation of people and of patients that you are going to see that have not received this education and for whom these topics might be difficult to approach. So I think it's quite important to be mindful and to ensure that these patients feel comfortable and to encourage them to speak about the topics and to provide the necessary care. And I do like to think that this is a way, I wanted to say a small way, but it is by no means small way, that we as healthcare professionals can help to advance gender equity through our work.
That's such a strong message to the medical profession, and so inspiring coming from the two of you as young medics and medics in training. And I think that the entire talk for me anyway is very inspiring to hear all that you have to say on this topic, and the passion that you have for how important SRHR is for young people and for gender equity. Thank you to both of you for talking with me today. It's been very educational and interesting, and I hope our conversations will continue in future.